Okay, here's the next one. In honor of Halloween, what is your favorite candy?
It's a tough one because there's so many elite candies, and you have to think about the demographic of a Patrick Mahomes, a little bit of a younger guy.
Yep.
And man, there's so many good ones. I'm gonna play the percentages, and I'm not gonna pick one of the 17 candies I've had since we've been here. You're over here eating meals.
No, Lucas is like gathering up Halloween. They have Halloween candy downstairs.
Yes, I know.
I haven't had any. Mooch brought us M&Ms and then he ate them.
Yeah.
And now Lucas is gathering. Yeah, this is very, very, there's a lot of distractions going on right now. Anyway, go ahead.
I think that Mahomes being the kind of player who can do a lot of different things, he's going to go with something with a cookie crunch, but also a chocolatey caramel combo.
My God, you're overthinking this.
Twix is the answer. I thought we were trying to stretch or something like that. Twix, Mark, is the answer.
Were you trying to give me time to go down there and get some candy?
You already have so much
food. I don't have any candy. I don't have any dessert. Anyway, I'll go Reese's because it's the right answer. Reese's is the right answer. Go ahead. What did Patty say?
My favorite candy is probably any type of like gummy, like Sour Patch Kids, Jolly Rancher gummies, stuff like that is probably my favorite candy. And then every once in a while, I'll get some like Reese's Pieces or M&M's or something like that. But mostly the sour gummies.
Do I get partial credit? He mentioned Reese's.
He mentioned seven things.
Yeah, but none of them were yours.
But he said, "Quiet, Tim." Just push some buttons. He does not get partial credit.
I have to get something over you. My candy was named and yours wasn't. That's got to be worth something.
He said Reese's Pieces. He didn't say Reese's Cups.
Play it again. Play it again, Grandy.
We are trying to milk time.
Play it again.
My favorite candy is probably any type of like gummies. Like Sour Patch Kids, Jolly Rancher gummies, stuff like that is probably my favorite candy. And then every once in a while, I'll get some like Reese's Pieces or M&M's or something like
or
that.
Reese's Pieces or Reese.
Now and again, he didn't mention your candy. He mentioned Reese's Pieces, which are not Reese's peanut butter cups.
By the way, I didn't say Reese's peanut butter cups. I just said Reese's.
It's because you're as general and you're as fraudulent as he is.
Next question. What was your go-to video game in college?
I would say it is that NCAA football game. Not Madden, although I should say Madden because at Madden.
I can't believe you left me that answer.
NCAA football game.
I will say Madden. Go ahead, Grandy.
I played a ton of 2K, just basketball. We played a little bit of FIFA as well. I think one of the World Cups happened when I was in college, so we played a ton of that at that point. But I was a ton of just 2K basketball, just going out there, either doing my career or even just like we would play just the regular like teams. And we'd do that for hours on hours, man. Probably hurt my grades a little bit playing so much.
Let's wrap it up. Give the answer, Mahomes. Give the answer, Mahomes, and let's move on.
Oh, he's trying to stretch. He's trying to let you go get some Reese's.
Those are some correct answers.
Yeah.
FIFA is how the majority of Americans got into soccer. That game is phenomenal. It's made soccer fans out of a lot of people.
I continue to lead dibs 1.1-1 as we go to the final
dubious
question.
Don't nod at that, Tim Jordan.
Yep. See, Tim knows. Mark knows. I don't know why you're fighting this. It's unanimous. Last question. Your only chance to win is to get this right.
It's
so this
big.
Is very dramatic. What character did you play when you played Mario Kart? What character did you select when you played Mario Kart?
It's an easy one.
What do you think?
Well, you don't go to the marquee Mario or Luigi. You can go Bowser or Waluigi. I actually preferred Rosalina because she had a diversity of using a cart or a motorcycle. I'm sorry if I...
Tim, they say I'm the talkative one on this show. What is happening right now?
I actually played game for years.
We've all played this game. It's Mario Kart.
You had to Google the characters.
I know because I wanted to see which one I was going to pick. I wanted to remind myself of all of them. I know Mario Kart. I know exactly what I'm going to pick.
The correct answer? Yoshi!
That's the correct answer.
You better come up with something else.
No.
Don't gravy train me with the lead.
You just named 18 characters before switching to Yoshi.
I never switched.
Yes, you did.
I told you what you don't pick.
You wanted to talk about Rosarita or Rosalina or whatever you want to call her.
You know what? Just say Birdo. Actually, King Boo is sneaky good.
I'm sticking with my pick. It's Yoshi. Go ahead.
Whatever.
I was a Yoshi guy myself. I don't know why.
I had it first. You gravy train.
And I felt like, for some reason, when I was a kid, I felt like he was
such
the fastest in the car, even though that makes no sense. I played it growing up, and then I played it a lot in college. We were finding all the shortcuts. I was looking up all the ways to cheat and win, and it was a lot of fun to play.
Who talks more, Dibs or Mahomes? Jesus, good Lord.
What is happening right now? Mr. Mario Kart, what's the most difficult course in Mario Kart?
Yoshi.
The course, yeah, the race course.
I don't know the names
Rainbow
of the
Road, bro.
This isn't about...
Thank you.
This isn't about Mario Kart
knowledge.
Tell
me you never played without telling me you never played.
This isn't about that.
You're such a casual.
I won.
Whatever.
You got beat by a casual.
Rainbow Road, dude.
All right.
One false move and you're... Night-night. My son, just real quick.
Oh, my gosh.
Was sneaky good. Sneaky good at Mario Kart. And that was... You know, as a parent, judge me if you want. Occasionally, I would...
I judge you all the time.
I'd be outside, maybe in the garage, maybe behind the garage. I'd come back in and say, hey, kids, who wants to play Mario Kart with Dad?
Oh, God.
Let's play! Mom's out of town!
You're kidding me.
Dude, hours, bro. Hours. Hashtag good parenting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that
is... Speaking of which, I'm getting hungry.
That sounds just like you.
Totally.
Well, there's some candy downstairs
if you
want some.
Rosalina.
Willard.
Elegant and effective.
Rosalina.
Thank you.
All right, so Willard and Dibs here at the Madden compound. That's pretty fun. That's fun to hear from Kermit the Mahomes as he talked on the Kansas City Chiefs radio flagship, once again, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. But... we wanted to share this with you because we thought this was a really fun, energetic, informative conversation. The great Steve Mariucci stopped by earlier right here at the Madden compound. And oh, by the way, he is one of the speakers who will be up on stage shortly. We started out by thanking Mooch for stopping by and obviously asking him, how's he doing?
It's good to be over here. This is going to be a lot of fun tonight.
This is going to be a lot of fun. What are you looking forward to most?
I don't know. I just seeing the family, looking around this museum. Okay, that's what this is, right? And talking about John Madden, I'm sure we're going to have some laughs.
No doubt. And when you like think about John Madden, the first time that you encountered John Madden or your history with John Madden, because everybody is intertwined with John in football and in the Bay Area, actually. So is there a moment where you remember meeting him or being touched by him that you want to share?
Well, I've obviously our first exposure to him was listening. Well, I as a coach, I knew of him as a great coach.
Sure,
okay,
sure.
But then, for so many years, he was so good in the booth, and I've watched 8 bazillion football games as a kid growing up with my mom and dad, and he became everybody's favorite in the booth. And so, when I started coaching, sooner or later, I knew I was going to have John Madden do one of our games. The biggest memory, that the thing that puts a smile on my face, is when he came out to Green Bay and I was coaching the Niners. Because as an assistant, you don't get to talk to John Madden. You got to be the head coach, right? Or you got to be Reggie White or Brett Favre or the star, right? You the assistants never get to even shake his hand. So when I was the head coach of the Niners, we played at Green Bay, and that's where I grew up, back there. I'm not a cheesehead, but pretty darn close. I grew up in Iron Mountain, right on the border of Wisconsin, but I grew up a Packer fan. And my family came down and this and that, and I had a lot of people come. But John and I first really met then, and I was the head coach, and we had the production meeting. Usually you do it in the green room or in a room in the hotel. Well, we did it on this bus, and it became a little bit different kind of a production meeting, because it was like, hey, Mooch, why don't you show me around town here? I go, come on, let's go. So we're talking a little bit about the game, but more about, okay, let's turn over here. There's Mike Holmgren's house. Okay, that's where, come on, show me where Favre lives. We drive the bus over there. There's where Brett Favre lived, and come on to my cul-de-sac. So we drove up the cul-de-sac where I lived, and I'm going, okay, so that's my house on the end of the cul-de-sac right there, and this is Juckala's house. And and this is Safransky's, and that's the Olsons, and that's where I lived right there. And all of a sudden, about 8 bazillion kids come running out because now there's the Madden's bus the cul-de-sac where the kids play street hockey. And the kids are going, "Hey, Madden! Hey, Madden!" And you've seen that before. And so that was our first encounter of a production meeting, was driving around Green Bay's neighborhoods and just fending off all the kids. It was a lot of fun. Then the next time it happened, well, we did it again, but I said, next time we do this, I got to have my mom bring some pasties down. Some, you know what pasties are?
Let our listeners know.
Well, come on. So back in Michigan, back in the mines, Cornish pasties, instead of a sandwich, you know, we make bologna sandwiches now. Pasties have meat and potatoes and carrots, and it's a pastry, and it's awesome, and it's really good for you. And they would bring those down in their lunch bucket down in the mines, okay? It was very good eating. Anyway, so my mom brought a bunch of pasties down for everybody on the bus, and it was like a feast, and it was like, make sure you have enough ketchup. And I mean, so it became kind of a thing that we would ride around in his bus and have the production meeting eating pasties, looking around town.
I've never so heard good. of a progressive production meeting. Did he do this with other coaches, or was this just a you thing?
No, that's I don't know what he did with other coaches, but I know he didn't get pasties from any other coach because my mom brought him down. But,
so good.
Oh, that's awesome. The Madden Cruiser. I mean, it was just like that whole thing in and of itself became so iconic. I ran into it one time as a kid out on Highway 5. We stopped at Harris Ranch, and there was the Madden Cruiser in the parking lot, and he was leaving Harris Ranch, and he's walking through the parking lot. It just reminded me of that because you said the way the kids, I mean, he's like the Pied Piper, mm-hmm. like everybody just running toward the
guy.
Well,
it's not like everybody had a bus, and so he, you know, they knew who it was. And that's one of my regrets, and I've known John now a long time, and I rode on the bus and all of that, but I never had a chance to ride like across the country on that bus and stop at all those diners and all those small town restaurants and cafes, and you know, that would have been awesome. You know, I would have slept on the floor just to do that.
Yeah, no doubt. And just the idea of John at that time, and a lot of our listeners, and I'm looking at our director of sports, Lucas, who's barely in his early 30s and probably not old enough to remember those times. But
does he know he had a bus?
I don't even know if he, you know, at the time it was like, it was Madden and Summerall, and John didn't fly, and so he traveled on the bus. But when John Madden and Pat Summerall were calling your game as a coach, you had to feel a little bit of an extra import in a regular season game, more so than now where, yeah, you know, you get your A crew for Fox, or you get your A crew this and that, and Sunday and Thursday and Monday. There's so much football, but the Madden Summerall vibe as a coach, that had to give you a little extra feel.
Yes, and when you had them, you knew it was a big game, right? They were assigned the big games, and so it was fun in the product. They were different. You know, every network is, and their personnel are different when they interview you in a production meeting about the game and about who's hurt and about this and about that guy. And, you know, and of course, John had his own style. Pat Summerall was awesome. But you just knew how, a couple things. You knew how intelligent John was by the questions he asked you, but you knew that he was prepared, that he watched a lot of film. And then, but you also knew that he was there for having some fun and getting to know you and getting to know the person. And that's where he was so good, is he gave a darn about people and their background and their families and all of that, all of those things.
The Terrell Owens catch game, he did that game. Do you remember any specific interactions in the bigger games that he did that you were a part of?
Mm.
Was it always before the game? Was there ever anything after the game?
No, I never saw him after the game. You know, I think when he got done with the booth, he probably tried to hightail it out of there.
Yeah, right.
And then we were in the locker room, and then going to the press conferences. Never really saw him. Would see him before the game because he'd always come to practice.
Hmm.
you know, he'd come with his tennis shoes on, his khaki pants, and that big shirt hanging out. And then he would be watching practice and asking you questions about this guy and that guy and whatnot. He always, I mean, we do those production meetings on Zoom right now sometimes the guys watch practice, sometimes they don't, but he was very thorough. He always liked going to practice. Of course, he was on the road for 6 months.
Yeah.
He had time to go to practice.
Steve Mariucci with us here on Willard and Dibbs, and we're at the Madden compound. I was thinking about this game this weekend. Madden would be doing this if he were still broadcasting.
Which game are you talking
about? Well, the Niners and Chiefs coming up this weekend. And we were talking earlier about what we perceive, at least, as a little bit of a mental disadvantage that the Niners are trying to overcome because the Chiefs have had their number. Is that something that people just make up? Have you ever experienced that as a coach where you felt like your team kind of had something else that they needed to get over because they've struggled against a certain opponent?
Yeah. When I was an assistant in Green Bay coaching the quarterbacks, I had Brett Favre was there, and Brett was one of John's favorite guys. We would always... You know, we a couple times we played in the playoffs, a couple times on Thanksgiving, and a couple times just down there. 6 times in a row we played the Cowboys down in Dallas. It was weird scheduling, okay? Coincidental, but it was, and they beat us. They just kept beating us, and we were young. And in 1995, in fact, the last time the Dallas Cowboys were in the NFC Championship game with Michael Irvin, the triplets, Irvin, Aikman, and Emmitt Smith. Deion Sanders played wide receiver in that game. So I was coaching on the Packers, right? And John Madden's doing the game, of course. And, gosh, one of our coaches got run over. Gil Haskell hit his head on the side, went into a coma, had to stay in Dallas for a while. But, you know, it's... It was one of those, you know, we have to get over this hurdle or we're never going to get anywhere. And then the next year, the teams met up and finally the Packers beat the Cowboys. But it was one of those things where it's like, are we ever going to beat these guys?
Is that more of a fan creation or is that something that actually matriculates into the locker room and the coaches and the players? Because we're kind of going through it here as broadcasters and fans with this whole Chiefs thing.
It depends on which guys you're talking to, because there's a lot of new guys that didn't experience all those losses or those Super Bowl losses, right? There's some new kids that just really don't care about that, right? But the coaches that were there, the players that were there, you know, you're talking about different quarterbacks and different, you know, a lot of different supporting cast here. So I suppose they're aware of it, but I don't know if they let it haunt them.
How do you see this matchup right now based on its recent history?
Well, yeah, forget the recent history, really. This is a new game, new teams, basically. Yeah, they have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and Andy was one of the coaches that was coaching with us in Green Bay.
Yeah.
He and I shared an office because we ran out of office space, so they shoved us in the same little room. Anyway, the 49ers are the best 3-3 team that this league's ever seen, right? I mean, they're very good. They're very talented. And when they have their guys healthy, and I don't know if Christian McCaffrey's coming back or when, who knows, right? They are still very, very good and very, very physical. So this game is going to be an important one. This game is going to be one that would get them over the hump or the hurdle, that mental hurdle you're talking about. You know, Debo Samuels is kind of like a twin to Christian McCaffrey. They both can do everything, right? They can play receiver, slot, running back, and return kicks if need be, whatever that is. And when they're both on the field at the same time, it's like, how do you match up, you know? But with Kittle and Juwan Jennings and Ayuk and Jordan Mason. How's he feeling? You know, have you heard today?
Still in the blue jersey, so he's trending in the right direction.
Trending.
But, yeah.
And Brock Purdy is very, very good. So this ought to be a good game, and the Chiefs are for real. I love watching Patrick Mahomes play. He's the magic man. I mean, he's as special as we've ever seen. I'm sure John would really love him.
Yeah, and doing it this year without really much of a run game and without any real wide receiver. He's doing it with a lot of tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, doing it
win differently, yeah.
Yeah, win differently. And I think about Kyle Shanahan and as kind of a parallel to your time with the Niners, because you were really successful, but you didn't quite get over the hump. And Kyle so far has been really successful and hasn't gotten over the hump. And what is it like as a coach when you're knocking on that door, but you're not able to really just push through it?
Trust me, you'd rather be that coach or that team that's knocking on the door every year than a team that is awful and doesn't have that kind of pressure.
Can't find the door.
Yeah, they're so he's right there. This team is right there. It's about finishing games, right? Having a good fourth quarter, putting a good drive together. They're so darn close, you know, and if they can stay healthy, like I said earlier, they're going to be right there again.
Do you see a parallel? I think we forget that you had spent some time on the same staff with Andy Reid. In this town, Kyle now gets compared a lot to Andy in Philly. In other words, like, you're really good, you're knocking on the door a lot, but frustration boils because you can't get that last one. No one thinks about that with Andy anymore because now he's with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and they're the big dogs. Do you see parallels to Andy in Philly and Kyle now?
I hope not, because Andy got let go in Philly and then he had to resurface someplace else. I can't imagine Kyle getting let go. So I hope that's just, maybe that sounds like there's some similarities there right now, but Kyle's still a good young coach, and he's got a lot more wins coming up.
Yeah, and the track record, it would be the thing, and hopefully he doesn't have to wait as long as Andy to get his Super Bowl, because that would be another 6 years here for Kyle in San Francisco before going elsewhere. And when you watch the Niners play, it seems to me that they play differently than a lot of other teams with the use of the fullback, and they love their tight end and the rest of it. What do you make of the Niners and the way they go about their offense?
It's old school. It's old school football, and you mentioned the use of a fullback. Half the teams don't have a fullback.
Right.
And so the fullback is a dinosaur. They don't use them in colleges either anymore. They're always in shotgun and spread and three and four wide, sometimes more. The fullback is like, who, what? And so I love the teams that establish the ground game. And I've said this before, though, the tight end position now, which is extremely underpaid, is maybe, other than quarterback, maybe the most difficult position or more demanding position in football, because they're having to teach these guys to put their hand on the ground and block right next to a tackle in line, and then play it in the slot, and then play receiver, and then come on in and play you or fullback, and all those protections and all those routes and all the different things that they're having. I don't know how they practice or meet with these tight ends. They're doing so many things. They're replacing that fullback that the team doesn't have. And so the Niners have a great one. In Kittle, and of course Travis Kelce is the other great one, and there's a handful of them right now, and they're extremely underpaid compared to the wide receivers.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment. Steve Mariucci joining us on Willard and Dibbs, and I was going to compare it to the wide receiver. It sounds like you're saying that the wide receiver position is overpaid.
Did I say that?
Well, that's why I said
they got guys making $35 million a year, you know, and then they'll catch four balls in a game and, you know, that kind of thing, and they hardly block. You got to have great ones, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that the tight end is a little bit underappreciated. And then what we have, you know, we've felt that way with running backs too. Why do you need to draft one in the first round when you get all these other kids that are fifth, sixth, seventh round playing very well, right, making peanuts, and so maybe you don't need to draft a running back that early unless there's a great one there. But the tight end position is becoming, if you can get one, and I had Tony Gonzalez at Cal, and then, of course, he went over to Kansas City and Atlanta, and now is in the Hall of Fame. Those kinds of guys, man, if they can block and if they can play receiver, it's a matchup nightmare. What do you do? If you were the defensive coordinator, how do you cover a guy like that? With a linebacker? Not fast enough. With a corner? Not big enough. A safety? Not fast enough. I don't know. Double them? You know, it's just a problem.
It's funny you say that, because I was watching tape from the New Orleans game with Kansas City, and they had Travis Kelce actually receive the snap out of the pistol and run the...
Well, he was a quarterback, you know, in high school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It looked like it, because he ran the read option with Xavier Worthy, and Mahomes is behind him, and so Andy's got all kinds of toys.
He lets... Andy's nuts, you know, and he lets his guys... He was really close with John. they were on the competition committee together and this and that. But he lets his players, because when you're good, you can kind of do whatever you want. But he lets his players suggest new little wrinkles and new plays and new fun things, right? And I'm not kidding. When I go to there and watch them practice, they're practicing that stuff, and they're laughing, and they're having fun, and they're doing throwing underhand, and they got all these, they got a bag of tricks, man. And you can be assured that it's one of them's coming out in the first half against the Niners.
Well, we were talking about that earlier. That kind of comes with the resume they have, right? You can afford to play it loose and try some things, and people won't criticize you, and that feels like that's present in this matchup, because the Niners have all this angst with the way it's gone with these two teams.
I know it. You know, the other team that's starting to play like the Chiefs on offense are the Detroit Lions. They're starting to do all that. You know, they're very good to run and throw, and then now they're mixing in the goofy stuff, the fun stuff, the laterals, the, you know, all that different thing, and fans love it, players love it. And even if it doesn't work once in a while, you know, you still got that little, like, just going to keep doing this stuff. You know?
And how important is that inside the locker room to have a team that knows that you might pull some of that out? And we talked about last year Kansas City doing the ring around the rosy, where they break the huddle and they're just all running in circles.
Yep.
Does that stuff, like, even if the play doesn't work, does that help your overall culture, knowing that you know, a player can raise his hand and say, hey, coach, let's try this?
Now, don't think that every time there's a suggestion the coach runs the play, okay?
Right.
But can you imagine the defense standing there watching the offense practice that on the in the indoor facility? Like, okay, let's get this ring around the rosy, right, guys? But they give it some importance.
You mentioned earlier that for the 49ers, it's about finishing. It's about that fourth quarter. What do you see? Is there an issue there, or is it circumstance? What do you see with their, if there are even those fourth quarter struggles?
Yeah. So as a coach, and you just shake your head and just kind of brainstorm as to what it could be. Okay, so we know we have these losses that we failed in the fourth quarter, whether it was Kyle back in Atlanta in the Super Bowl or wherever the big games are, you didn't hang on to a lead. Okay, so then you start going, all right, we're going to do a research on this, and we're going to try to find out what it is. Is it a fumble here? Is it a penalty there? Is it a defense giving up a big play? Is it our conditioning? Are we getting tired? Is it what we're eating? Do we stretch? Are we getting guys hurt during games? And I think if you do the research, you'll find that they have a multitude of reasons why they've lost. There's no one thing that says, yeah, this is it. This is why we lost all those close games at the end. It's a different reason every game. And so you just got to keep swinging and hope that another reason doesn't show up at the end.
Incidentally, as we bring it full circle, John Madden is number one all time in winning percentage in games settled by 7 points or less. Somebody shared that stat earlier. I think he was, you know, 700% or 70% winning percentage. But just for our audience, your memories of John as a coach, because I was a very young kid in the Bay Area watching the Oakland Raiders in the 70s, but what he did as a coach, I think, sometimes gets overlooked based on all of the other Madden stuff.
Yeah, he was young. He was big. He was animated. He was he let his players play. He had some characters on his team. You know, he didn't have a bunch of choir boys. He had these characters on his team, and he let them be themselves, just like John was going to be himself. Great rivals with the Steelers, and back in the 70s, you know, the AFC was fun to watch. And I was shocked that John didn't keep coaching. You know, I thought for sure he'd just stick around and keep winning and chase Shula's record. I don't know. But then he had he got tired, and obviously he had other things that he could do.
Sure did.
Obviously.
Sure did. Do you ever play Madden, and are you any good at it?
You know what?
It's funny because we've had this conversation.
You know what? Are you any good at it?
No, I'm not. Okay, and it's like you know, when you get beat by a little kid, you know, you go like, I'm not going to do this much more. You know, it's like.
Oh God.
There's too many buttons, Coach.
Do you know what the A button does? Do you know what that does on the Madden game?
What?
I don't know.
How would I know that?
You're a coach. You're supposed to know, Coach.
Come on, Coach.
Yeah.
Great to see you.
All right.
Thanks for coming and hanging out with us. Good luck tonight.
Yes.
Thanks.
I'm sure.
Good luck. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah, nobody knows. Yeah. It's like the A button.
We're going to eat some more M&Ms right here.
Nobody knows.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, what are we doing? Well, they're doing it right now.
Yep.
They're out there performing right now and sharing Madden stories. Pretty fun. But I'm locked in on a couple of the things that he said and really talking about that rivalry back in his day between the Packers and the Cowboys when he was an assistant and how it took 5 or 6 tries before the Packers finally got over the top. And you saw what happened once they got over the top. They finally were able to sort of move forward and not just get over the Cowboys, but get over the top of the entire NFL. And that's really how I feel about this. We can think that this is the best roster all we want, but the bottom line is they've not gotten over the top. And I think that this game coming up this weekend is much more mental than it is physical.
Especially for the 49ers. I don't know how much it's mental for the Chiefs.
Completely for the 49ers,
right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know if you get the win, how much that would carry over to a possible second meeting in the Super Bowl. But I think for the 49ers, mentally, it's about cementing what you did last week, because last week you played your most complete game since the opener against the Jets, and you know that win over the Jets at the time feels better then than it did now. I mean, the Jets are a team that is maybe going to bounce back, or we're still kind of waiting for it, but in the moment the Jets were supposed to be really good, and you came out and you handled them in all three phases, and since then it's been really uneven until last weekend. So for me, mentally, it's about, you know, what can you do from the Seattle game in a short week on the road, division opponent? You handle them. That game was not very much in doubt other than the kickoff return that made it a 2-score game again. So can you take that effort, that performance, and carry it forward this week? And then if you do it again against Dallas, now you're on to a real thing, a real trend.
Here's kind of what I'm getting at. Take a listen to George Kittle, who visited on Debo Samuel's podcast. And there are a couple of different conversations that take place that I think really illustrate what we're talking about. Listen to the first thing that George has to say about this specific matchup with the Chiefs.
I think it's a great matchup.
Mahomes is Mahomes.
Yeah, for sure.
He's amazing. Kelce just decided to get really hot like the last 2 weeks.
I know, bro. Like,
I know. So, like, I mean, he's...
That's your guy.
Travis is amazing. Yeah, I love Trav. But he... So they've got that working out. They've got some major injuries on their team, too, which is, you know, but they're still finding ways to win. And, like, that's the hardest thing in the NFL is finding ways to win. Anytime you have Mahomes and Kelce, though, you're probably going to find a way to win. And then I would also say this is probably the best defense we've gone against this season. Like, that's what, you know, we've talked about already in our tight end room. And they have a lot of really good playmakers out there. Chris Jones is an absolute monster.
Definitely.
And, like, can't leave him one-on-one. Like, he's going to probably get an Aaron Donald treatment where you just always slide to him, get 4 hands on him 24-7. Yeah. I mean, I can't wait. Like, these are the games that you play football for. It's a game of the week. You got Tom Brady talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be
deal.
Yeah. It's going to be really fun.
Okay. These are the games that you play football for. And to me, just, again, this is – I look at that as it can go one of two ways. And I don't view it as an advantage. It's not just like, to me, you don't win in professional sports because you're more excited than the other team. If you can harness that, then wonderful. That's great, because it does mean more to you than it does to them. And I think usually the team that feels that way usually comes out on top. But that can also backfire on you. It can backfire on you big time. The Chiefs are going to come in completely loose, and they just don't have any answers that people are waiting on. That's the difference between these two franchises. No one's waiting on any answers from the Chiefs. They get to go play football in a completely different style. They get to play football the way the Warriors played basketball under Kevin Durant. And it was just a journey to see if you could do it again. And if you did, great. And if you didn't, we'll talk about why, so that you can come back next year and fix that and do it again. But the Niners are still in this bucket where they've got questions to answer, and I feel like you can hear it. You can hear it with any one of their answers.
And they haven't answered those questions, and even if they win on Sunday, they're still not going to be able to answer those questions, I don't think. And
see, I don't agree with that.
Well, you beat Kansas City good. It's a regular season game at home in which you're favored. That's nice. You beat Kansas City, a team that's owned you. They've beaten you four straight times. That's also nice. You're 4-3. That's super great. But you're not answering the real questions that need to be answered, which can't be answered until you get to February.
See, that's your question. I think they need to answer their question. I get what you're saying. You're talking about what the fan cares about. And the fan is not going to be satisfied because of a regular season win over the Chiefs. I think the Niners will. I think right now for them, this isn't about winning the Super Bowl. This is about cracking the code. It's about cracking the code of the Kansas City Chiefs. And they have not been able to figure it out, almost to a head-scratching level. You can see the looks on their faces on the sideline, where they're like, what in the hell just happened? We feel like we won that game. We feel like we're better. We feel like we outplayed them. We did this, that, and the other. You're supposed to go out there and do the right things, and then the right result will happen. And it keeps going the wrong way. And so no matter if it's regular season, postseason, or on a playground, I think for them, for those players, they've got to answer that question for themselves of, can this work out correctly when we go out there and do what we do? That's how I see this weekend.
Yeah.
It's not about any sort of final answer on Kyle Shanahan's narrative or the Super Bowl. As you said, that's 4 months away. You can't do anything about that right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you could talk about cracking the code in a regular season game, and that's, yeah, you beat Kansas City. Okay, good. It's a regular season game, and if that means you crack the code, then so be it. I think it comes down more to, can you stack good games together? Because right now they've played, by my estimation, 2.5 good games, or maybe 3.75 good games. You haven't closed out games. The Jets was a complete game. You didn't have McCaffrey. Mason was great. You had a home game in a Monday night spot. You handled them wonderful. And beyond that, your game against Minnesota, that was a pretty good game, but you lost to a team that might be better than you. We'll see. You gave two away against two bad teams, and you beat a bad team. So then you bounce back and you beat Seattle on the road. That's never going to be something I discount, because Seattle's a tough place to play, and it's a divisional opponent. So here we are. If you beat Kansas City, I don't know if that's cracking the code, because for me, the code is the Super Bowl.
And again, that's your code.
That's my code.
Yeah, I'm hearing what they're saying.
Right, but I don't think that they're saying, like, if we win this, then everything is fine and we're going to win the Super Bowl. The code that they're going to crack is a regular season game at home against a good team.
You can't win a Super Bowl in October. I'm listening to George Kittle literally say, these are the games you play football for. This means a lot to them, because they can't figure out why they haven't been able to do it yet. And so this is, you know, you've got a 2-year-old at home.
Yeah.
Got to crawl before you can walk. Like, I don't even think, that's why I hate how much the Super Bowl comes up this time of year. Forget the Super Bowl. We're here, we're now, it's October, and the 49ers, if I listen to them correctly, are saying they have got to figure out a way to beat this football team. I think that's the only thing they're thinking about right now. They sound obsessed with it.
Well, I mean, what happened last time you played them in a game like this, week 7, when you were trying to crack the code? You got run out of the gym.
I
and you had
trying
Jimmy
to crack
Garoppolo
the code at that time. And it was
you were 3-3.
Yeah, and it's a completely different football team.
But it's the same idea. It's a regular season game, and you lost that game, and it mattered for what? Nothing, because you went out and you went to the NFC Championship game anyway. So for me, I'm not trying to downplay this as a big game, because it is. I think it's bigger for the fans than it is for the team, and hearing George Kittle say that, yeah, these are the games that you play football for, but what about next week against Dallas? Is that one of the games that you play football for? And
did you just say you think that this one is bigger for the fans than it is for the team?
Agreed.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. No,
yeah.
I don't think that's what I'm hearing at all. That's not what I'm hearing at all.
Well, these are his words, and you know, let's see what he says against Tampa come out of the bye. If they're, you know, 4-4, and he says, "Well, these are the reasons why we play football."
I mean, I haven't heard
that way.
They haven't said that at any other point. The only thing they've said that even resembles that was Seattle last week when they said they're treating treating it like a must win, and that had nothing to do with the opponent. That had to do with the math.
Yeah.
That had to do with the standings. There's one more from George that also includes, again, the other voices that you hear are Deebo Samuel, and did you say her name is Liv Moods? Liv Moods. Pretty exciting. But there's more to that conversation and what the two of them had to say. So we'll hear that coming up next. Your call's always welcome, 888-957-9570. We're sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. We're live at the Madden Compound. It's Willard and Dibs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now back to Willard and Dibs. The guys are live, remembering the great John Madden from his studio in Pleasanton.
Well, look, fun day. Absolutely fun day. And we really appreciate you making yourself a part of it, interacting the way we all did. Steve Mariucci joining us, Stan Bunger joining us, and especially for you, a little trip down memory lane.
No doubt. A lot of my old KCBS co-workers, people who were working there then, some who are still working there now, and just a couple of two or three people I haven't seen in 15 or 20 years, and it's fun to catch up with, you know, co-workers, former co-workers, especially when it comes to KCBS, which is a station that gave me my start, which was 27 years ago, Mark.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
No doubt.
If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Wither and Dibs, free Odyssey app, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. While you're there, do it for our other shows as well, Morning Roast, Steiny and Goo. We're closing in on Niners and Chiefs, and obviously the next 48 hours, we will be all over this in a number of ways. We mentioned that we were going to hear one more from George Kittle on the Deebo podcast. The other voice you'll hear is Liv Moods. Grandy, go ahead and fire away on that one.
Your team captain had this to say about the matchup this morning.
Fred Warner?
Yep. Nope. The Chiefs are undefeated this year and still at the top of their game.
Yep, they are.
They still got 15 back there. I have yet to beat him. I have played against him maybe four times now and have yet to beat him. I think it's an important game for us to try and get over that hump and get the win.
I'm definitely with Fred on this. Like, yeah, I just said,
that's a good quote.
I haven't beat him either. But, you know, 15 is a heck of a player. You know, at any moment he's liable to do anything possible, and it's like, you know, like, I don't like referring back to Super Bowls, but, you know, rookie year, we up, and Pat Mahomes just go do things Pat Mahomes does, and
yeah,
the 2-minute drill in this past Super Bowl is just, it's just Pat Mahomes doing Pat Mahomes things.
But, I mean,
you
got to
give him his, you got to give him his flowers. Man.
Yeah,
got to give him to him.
Well, yeah, when you have three Super Bowl wins,
yeah, for sure, definitely.
At the end, it sort of sounds like, you know, Deebo kind of takes the conversation to a place of like, well, Patrick Mahomes is good. Well, yeah,
yeah.
Got that part. Got that part. But I wonder, because, you know, you said something there about 5 minutes ago that I just happen to see different, which is that you think that this is bigger for the fans than it is for the players. And you hear that quote from Fred Warner. You hear the way the guys respond to it. This is very, very mental. This is very personal for these guys. I, as a fan, I can look at a loss this weekend and I can wrap my head around it. I have all the confidence in the world that you're going to crush Dallas the next week. And if you go 4-4 into the bye, into a division that doesn't have any other really good teams, and Christian McCaffrey is returning, I'm chilling. I'm chilling. Like, this is not the end of the world if the Niners lose this game as a fan. But when I listen to these players, man, I think it's a problem if they lose this game. I think it's a problem because I think that from the mental side of the game, they will be at a deficit going into the second half of the year if they lose it.
I think it's only a deficit if they play him again. And the only way they'd play him again is in the Super Bowl. So for me, yes, you want to get this one because you've never gotten 15. And you also haven't gotten 87 either. And that's part of it. But they were talking about 15, Patrick Mahomes. And so, yeah, it would be a deficit emotionally if you face them again, but I don't think that you go into Dallas and think, man, I don't know if we can beat Dallas because we couldn't beat Mahomes again. That's five in a row. He's gotten us five straight times. So I don't think that this matters at all unless they play Kansas City again.
Yeah, to me, it's not even about it. It has nothing to do with like the next week of the regular season. It has everything to do with how you view yourself and the swagger and the confidence and all of this. You can't legitimately follow up Deebo Samuel's comment from 2 weeks ago that we've been the best team in football for a while now, and we just haven't gotten over the top. You cannot legitimately do that if you go now lose to them yet again. It feels like every time you're a one-point favorite or a two-point favorite, and it's been in the Super Bowl, and then it's been in the Super Bowl again, and then there was the year that it was Christian's first game, and the 49ers were in sort of a weird transitional spot that they didn't even know they were in because Jimmy was about to get hurt and get knocked out for the season the very following week, and the Brock Purdy era was going to begin. None of us knew that as of yet, but the way this one went down in February, adding into it, if you now have them in your building and you're a favorite again, I get that both sides are a little dinged up, but I just, you're going to have to do this at some point if you're truly going to legitimately view yourself as the best team in the NFL, which they fancy themselves.
Well, they're wrong, and all he has to do is look at a loss to Minnesota and a choke job against the Rams, and a gack job against Arizona. So if you want to think that you're the best team in the NFL, you're allowed to. I don't get to control what you think or how you see yourself, but I see an undefeated team that you've played that beat you. I see a team with one win, and their one win was against you.
Sure.
And I see another team that isn't very good who also beat you. So if you think that you're the best team in the NFL, that's great. I want my team to be confident. I want my team to have that sort of a swagger. But honestly, if you say that and you lose this game and you fall to 3-4, it doesn't make me suddenly think, oh, now Debo's wrong. I already think that he's wrong because you are 3-3 and you should be 5-1. Fine. Even if you should be 5-1, that one was against a team that's undefeated.
But
so can you really say that you are the best team in the NFL?
You can feel that. Absolutely.
Of course you can. He's allowed to.
No, but I don't even think that it's a crazy thought. You know,
I don't think it's crazy, but I think it's wrong.
Spotlighting individual games, if you want to do that, then if the Niners do win this weekend, then they are the best team in the NFL.
Right. Because they beat the defending champ.
Well, that's what it sounds like to me. When a lot of people do that, it's like, if you're the best team, you wouldn't have lost that game. The best team loses games every year.
Of course.
Every year. They have disappointing, head-scratching, odd losses. Survivor pools are all over already. It's week six, and they're all over.
The whole idea of being the best team, to me, anyway,
he's
is
talking about it over
foolish.
But it's a larger sample.
Right, but the best team is the team that wins the Super Bowl. And again, it's process versus results, and we can do this till the cows come home.
So the Raptors were better than the Warriors.
They were that week, or those 2 weeks.
Okay.
And maybe it's because the Warriors had ligaments that were unable to withstand the rigors of a postseason. Whatever the reasons were, Toronto was good enough, and they were better enough to be the champs. And so it doesn't matter who's better. All that matters is who wins. So if you're 3-3 and you think that you're the best team in the NFL, you're allowed to think that, but you're 3-3.
Yeah,
so
but
what is it worth?
It's worth a projection is what it is. It's worth a projection. It's worth self-confidence. It's worth standing within the league. It's worth all kinds of things. If it was as simple as you lose a game, then you're out, then we're playing pro sports Survivor. You lost, you're gone. You're not good anymore because you lost to the Rams because things went haywire with 5 minutes left to go in a football game. Ronnie Bell's got bad hands, and Jake Moody pulled one a little bit. Like, I just don't – I don't think we can make narratives based on one game or even two games or even 1 month or whatever. We damn well know that both of these teams are going to be different – in November and December than they are now.
Both probably be playoff teams.
I would, and then, for sure, the
Chiefs. Then we can get into it and we can find out who the best team is, because you're going to have a 14-team tournament, and one of the 14 will be the Super Bowl champion, and that team will either be the best team or they won't be, but they're going to be the champion. And this goes back to 2 years ago when many people thought that the Niners were better than Philadelphia, and they may have been. But they weren't that day, and it's because your quarterback's arm fell off, and then your backup also got hurt, and you were out of quarterback. So whatever happened, happened, and so whether or not you were the better team to me, it doesn't matter.
Before we hustle out of here, it's been a day where people have been talking about a lot of memories, a lot of stories, and all of that. Today is the 10-year anniversary of the Travis Ishikawa home run.
That's right.
To send the San Francisco Giants into the World Series. And I think most would argue, you know, maybe some would say the Matt Cain perfect game, what have you, game one against Cliff Lee and the Rangers. But as far as just a pure energetic outpouring, many would say that that's the greatest moment in the history of Oracle Park. Got me thinking, though, over that decade, okay, 2014, your headline Bay Area sports moment since then is what?
Since the Ishikawa home run, which was 2014, for me, it'd probably be the Warriors' first championship. Did that happen? Was that 2014 or was that 2015 when they won their first title?
I think 14.
So that would have been before the Ishikawa. So.
But is there like one night? Is there one, like, not just an entire season, but, like, I'll give you mine, for example.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Steph Curry game four Boston, whatever that is, 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget that performance. I brought my sons to Chase Center, and we watched a road game on the big screens inside Chase Center.
That's right.
And it was just a journey. It was just a back and forth ball of stress and energy, and to watch what I think was just one of the great individual performances I can remember. For me, that is, if I'm going to spotlight one night that stands out in the last decade, that's the one.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. And I would probably go to when the Warriors clinched the title at home, which I think was their third of the four championships. And I was in the building for that one. And even though it seemed like it was a fait accompli, it was going to happen, just to be there for the home clinch, because I know that they beat Cleveland on the road the first time. But to be in the building for that one, that was a good one. The other one that pops to mind is the Game 7 over Sacramento, the get on the bus or don't game when Steph had 50. You know, that's another one. But
very good.
And we're so lucky that we are picking and choosing between championship moments, right?
For sure, for sure. Or like, yeah, you take that frustration and take it to some other city and see how they're doing.
Right.
Call Cleveland. Granny, what do you got? What do you got coming up?
We're going to hear from Kyle Shanahan, if you missed what he said earlier today, and also the morning roast going behind enemy lines, getting a view of the Niners from a Chiefs perspective. So we'll hear about that coming up as well.
Perfect. It's all brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. You want to do this again tomorrow back at the ranch?
Yeah, week 7 getting underway.
Week 7.
Going too fast, Mark.
Thursday, best day of the week, by the way. Thanks to everybody here. Tim Jordan, thank you for all that you did putting this together. Lucas, Matt, and obviously we want to give our thanks to the entire Madden family and Steve Mariucci and Stan Bunger. Go get the book on a very, very special day. For Dibs, for Granny, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Don't forget to shoot your shot. It's all you got.